So hello everybody and welcome. This is Lizzie and Justin from Third Space, and we are here again for another week of our Turning Towards Life conversation. You're all so welcome to be here with us, and Lizzie, I'm feeling very heart-gladdened to be here with you this Sunday morning in London in March 2023, when we're recording this. It's such a joy to be in this conversation together. Always. And I'm feeling very joyful to all of you who are listening with us. I was saying to you, Lizzie, just before, I had the great joy of meeting some people who had found their way to us over the last week and were enjoying delving into our increasingly vast archive of conversations, which is so welcome to you, whether you've been with us for the 5.5 years that we've been doing this, or whether you've just stumbled across this conversation and just beginning to join in, everyone is equally welcome. And as always, we have a wonderful and rich source to begin with. Thank you for choosing this for us, Lizzie. And here we are.
Thank you, Justin. Welcome, everyone. And we're going to read this poem this week by Victoria Erickson, and it goes like this. Promise to stay wild with me. We'll seek and return and stay and find beauty and the extraordinary in all the spaces we can claim. We'll know how to live, how to breathe magic into the mundane. We can be in love with 1,000 views and skylines and souls and minds at once. Don't apologize for your burn, your passion, or your enthusiasm. Enthusiasm propels the world.
So I'm going to read it too. And a reminder to all of you who are with us, you can find this in our Facebook group, in the notes to the podcasts, and on our turningtowards.life website too. This is by Victoria Erickson. Promise to stay wild with me. We'll seek and return and stay and find beauty and the extraordinary in all the spaces we can claim. We'll know how to live, how to breathe magic into the mundane. We can be in love with 1,000 views and skylines and souls and minds at once. Don't apologize for your burn, your passion, or your enthusiasm. Enthusiasm propels the world.
Justin. Where to begin? So I feel like I'm someone who has been on the magical side of enthusiasm and also the dark side of enthusiasm. And so this poem for me is like one of those times when I kind of come back round again to something that's caused me a lot of trouble and do my best to receive it once more as an original gift rather than something that's got me into trouble and I've tried to watch myself and see what that trouble is and, you know, all the things that you do when you see something that's getting in the way of your life becoming the way that is most fulfilling. And so when I read this line, enthusiasm propels the world, I really thought, my goodness, what even is enthusiasm and how could it possibly propel the world? And it just got me really thinking about it. And for me, this poem is this big invitation into presence, really, but the kind of presence that knows what magic is and also knows how to experience the extraordinary in very ordinary times and places and spaces. And somehow that feels very, very important to me in my life at the moment, is to be somewhere and actually be there. And there's such a I have such a tendency to be tending to many things at once, like being doing the shopping and thinking about the email that I haven't sent, or doing the washing up and remembering that I've forgotten to do something, or, you know, and I feel this new rising dedication to trying to be where I am very, very simply, and letting that simplicity be imbued with this kind of enthusiasm and beauty and extraordinary magicness feels like, don't know, like one of those profound and important invitations that I must take.
I'm feeling very supported in being present by what you're saying, Lizzie, and how you're being and what you're saying. I've invited in to the particular joy and deliciousness of this moment. And I love this, and I'm touched by this distinction that you make between really the way I heard you speaking, two different kinds of enthusiasm, the sort of kind of enthusiasm that can bring us deeper into what's here, and the kind of enthusiasm that can scatter us into the, you know, to the wild winds with all the different things. And there's a place for both of them. And this tuning into the vitality of this moment and this place and this person and this whatever it is, that kind of wild passion for what's here is extraordinarily inviting to me. Mm. And I think really necessary. There's something, I don't even really know how to begin to talk about this, but we often talk about that sort of the wider cultural forces that we find ourselves caught up in and being shaped by. And I'm always mindful when we talk about cultural forces that, of course, there are so many different kinds, and it depends how, what you experience depends upon where and who you're born and when and what part of the world and all of that. But in the sort of a sense of bigger picture, it seems to me that there are all kinds of reasons why we get encouraged not to get this way, not to really marvel at the wonder of what's right here with us, which is the way I'm taking what you're talking about. And in a way, I think there are all kinds of reasons, perhaps because it suits how money gets made, big money gets made, and perhaps because it suits how certain kind of politics goes, and perhaps it suits all those kind of things, that sometimes it's in the interests of sort of bigger cultural forces that we deaden ourselves, that we get more passive, less awake, more numbed, more amenable to buy stuff that we don't need or turn our attention places we don't need to turn it. So I was thinking whilst you were talking about on this side of things that you were talking about the wild enthusiasm for what's right here, just how extraordinarily unlikely it is that you and I are talking to one another. Just even that. And I'm not even talking about that we can talk with this amazing technology that no one person knows how to make, because it requires vast kinds of knowledge and then the capacity to bring things out of the earth and make them into machines and plug them together. I don't even mean all of that. I just mean that there are conscious, sentient beings like us, and we can think and feel and relate and talk to one another and understand and be in relationship. There's absolutely no reason I can figure out why any of that should be the case.
Mm-hmm.
It seems much more likely that it wouldn't be. And yet here we are. And right now we're both here and alive and able to participate in that. And that invitation from you, what you said, awakens me to it. That the most mundane of things, like the most ordinary, before we've even added in anything else. No products, no stories, no things, no art, no, just you and me. it's not only miraculous and unlikely that it's possible, but it's also, now I'm thinking about, and I'm going to stop myself in a second because I'll get way too, well, there you go. I'll get so enthusiastic I might not stop. It's not too enthusiastic. Just even that we have language, and having language took generation upon generation upon generation of humans before us to be the ones who somehow were the ones through whom language began to happen. And before that, there were billions of years of evolution to bring us. Anyway, so I sort of find myself going both deeply, deeply into this moment with wild gratitude, and then, of course, thinking about the vastness of it all. And I'm making a big point about it because I think it was in something that you said. You talked about the mundane. We really do have a choice about this, about whether to pay attention to this. And not only does it seem to me that the kind of aliveness that Victoria Erickson is inviting in us calls on us to do that. And if we're going to be alive, let's be alive. But also for me, the joy in washing the dishes and paying my taxes and even doing my emails, which is not something I enjoy doing at all, can be imbued with a sort of sense of gratitude because of everything that you've been pointing out to us.
Oh my gosh, I noticed when you just said paying my taxes, doing those Excel spreadsheets and trying to figure out mathsy things for me would be a very big challenge to find my joy in, because I'm so clunky at it and I resist it so much. One thing though I have learned is that when I'm doing something that I don't really like, which is often like mundane things, but it can be non-mundane as well, but I have more practice with mundaneness because my life is quite mundane lots of the time, as most people's is probably, is that I try and find different stories about what I'm doing. So I remember a while ago, someone said to me, when I do the washing up, I like to think that I'm doing a dance. And so sometimes I try and wash up or change the beds or wash the bath as if I'm dancing. And obviously I make myself snigger at myself because it's absolutely hilarious and ridiculous. And it does change. And I feel like that's also one of the things to be enthusiastic about, is that I am the maker of the story that I'm telling myself in any given moment that I'm doing anything. So there's the joy in the story, but there's also the joy, the enthusiasm for being a being that can make a story up about something, and that changes my experience of it. Like, I find myself kind of already reeling even saying those words, like, oh, so whatever I'm doing, I can make a story up about what it is that I'm doing, and that will enable me to have an experience of some kind. So if I'm telling the story that I'm in a galley in a boat slaving away while everyone else is having a nice time upstairs on deck in the sunshine, my experience of doing washing up is going to be really miserable. And I genuinely do that. Like, I know that I have like a thread of, it's like a sacrifice story in my life where I can find myself really resentful and really like, why isn't anyone else doing this? And why am I the only one doing this? And I can recognize that I'm telling myself a story that has me experience that resentment. Like, the result of my storytelling is resentment. So then when I can tell a different story about what's happening, what I'm doing, like I'm doing a dance, my experience of dancing is very different to my experience of being in the galley kitchen on a boat. And so what is it to see that the way that I move a bowl from one place to the other is a hand movement that could be in a, I don't know, a ballet or a Latin dance or something. And that's possible. It's quite something that I can, like, it makes me feel like there's a power in me, like a superpower in me, that I can narrate, I can tell the story of what I'm doing and shift my understanding of myself as a human being by doing that, but also in that moment have an experience of something different because of the story that I'm telling.
Isn't that everything? That's the thing that's really striking me, that what you've tapped into here, the sort of overarching or meta concern here, is that we are the ones whose experience and participation is shaped by the stories that we tell. That is what it is to be a human. And there are better and worse stories. There are more life-giving and less life-giving stories. There are ones that bring us into relationship and take us out of relationship. And there are stories that are more or less truthful. And there are stories that are more or less life-filled. And that we have an enormous amount of choice about the stories that we tell. Is very, I can feel in myself, remembering that is really life-giving. Oh, I've got a choice. And paying my taxes and doing the emails is a good example for me, because they're things that I resist. And I know with doing, for example, one story about doing my emails I have is they're an imposition on me and I'm never going to be able to finish them and I can't reply adequately and there's not enough time. And I know that when I take up the story that this is a way of me being in relationship with people and responding with care and feeling closeness, whether it's welcome or not, but feeling contact with people and then extending contact back again is what that bit of technology enables me to do. I'm much more able to enter into it, but more importantly, not just able to enter into it, but able to enter into it with the kind of qualities that I want to bring, like bringing care rather than resentment, bringing thoughtfulness rather than hurry, or bringing to the story that I tell and the story that we tell has an awful lot to do with which essential qualities of ours come into the world and which don't. So it sort of, as I'm speaking this through, I'm realizing, and particularly feeling from the way you said it, Lizzie, that one way, there's a sort of shallow way of looking at stories. Oh, we could just tell any story and some are better than others. But there's a really deep way of thinking about this, which is that they really change the nature of our participation mm-hmm. in things. And not just as an idea. I was imagining you washing the dishes, and I was imagining the kind of moves, the kind of way that you might be washing the dishes if you were in the midst of different stories, what it would be to wash the dishes in a dance. And in fact, I was imagining myself washing the dishes with great graceful arcs of taking the dripping plates out of the sink and landing them in the, you know, rack next to the sink where they're going to dry, and how the way that we move through the world is both shaped by and an expression of the story that we're telling. Which is one of the reasons why this poem is so inviting to me, because there are all kinds of reasons why it would have made sense for me in early parts of my life to learn to have a very contained body, to not move very much and to keep myself out of view or small or whatever. So for years and years and years, the idea that I might stand in the sink and make elaborate gestures whilst I move the dishes would have been so painful. It would have not been in view. And if I'd even tried it, it would feel so at odds with the way I knew myself. So you were talking about when you first started speaking about the story that allows you to be present in this moment with the passion and aliveness for this moment. And I was thinking about how a kind of presence, a story of presence for me is the wild one.
Mm.
For me, it's getting contact in with movement and freedom and expression and letting myself take up space, which is just a reminder to me that the stories, the life-giving stories for each of us, are deeply shaped by who we got to be as we were formed. And they're the same and different for each of us too.
Mm. Makes me think as well, this beginning line, promise to stay wild with me. I think that's what got me really when I read this, like, oh yes, I want to say that to everyone. Like, let's both do it. Let's promise each other that we'll stay wild with each other, that we'll make that ridiculous arc of the dishes, which is unreasonable and inefficient and silly because it gets everything wet. And yet it's funny and joyful. And what I notice as well, Justin, is most most grown-ups I knew growing up, in some way, I'm saying most because there was a few standout, hilarious people, but mostly people had kind of been beaten down into being grown-ups, who I have projected onto that, well, they must know what they're doing because they're so grown up, they've figured all this out and they're not much fun. And, you know, these people are different to me. You know, even my teachers, I just remember thinking that they weren't actually human. Like, they were so far from the exuberance that I was, so far from the enthusiasm that I felt, the mischief that I felt. And my teachers were like, I felt like they all dressed in brown. You know what I mean? Like brown things on that were very serious and committed. And thank goodness they provided whatever the stability was that they provided. But I very rarely found, and when I did find, I was so interested in it. I remember having a geography teacher who had this thing going on, and he would say, listen, let's get out on that field and look at those pieces of frost. Have you got any idea what it takes for that piece of frost to be formed? And he used to make us lie on the ground and stare at pieces of frost, and then suddenly talk about a Kawasaki motorbike that he'd seen on the way in and how amazing the sound of the roar of its, you know, he was completely kind of wild. And so I learned so much because I remembered all of the things that he had to tell me and everybody else, because it was alive. I could feel the aliveness in it. And then I remember a friend of my mum's, it's completely hilarious and wonderfully bonkers. And she had three children who just used to, you know, run riot and put melon in the video player, and they never were able to watch videos until, you know, 3 years later, they realized there was a slice of melon in the video player, and just really, you know, bonkers stories that made me feel like, oh, this is an interesting place to be. This is compelling. And there were, you know, that comes in a sea of very probably made serious for very good reasons adults. But I feel like there's a way that this promise to stay wild with me could be something that not only is between friends or something, but could be between generations. You know, it could be my job to stay wild so that my children and my nieces and nephews and the people beneath me in age-wise, they're joined in their experience too. And that I get to receive life more fully because I'm not only paying attention to the ways that I've also been beaten down into seriousness by commitments and difficulties and wounds and dynamics and politics and, you know, all of the things that we could say have kind of turned us into serious people. Maybe that could, I could tell the story that is a smaller part of me than this enthusiasm, that I could bring this enthusiasm to everything and that I wouldn't have to let it go in order to be a fully fledged adult.
Maybe one of the things that's happened is that we've, for one reason or another, in the part of the world where you and I live, Lizzie, that for all kinds of reasons, seriousness and wildness have been held as opposites. But what if they were held together? Because it seems to me that going out and lying on the grass and looking at the frost is a deeply serious endeavor. In the sense that it really matters. It's not throwaway, it's not shallow. There's a place for shallow too, but it's not shallow to go and marvel, but to learn how to awaken our own hearts and how to marvel about the world. It's not shallow to learn how to care deeply about something. And somehow it's possible to make a culture which, because it splits those apart, labels one as proper and one as not, we get denied access to one or the other. And I think it can happen both ways also. So it's possible to live a life of sort of shallow wildness, which never gets us in contact with anything serious and never gets us in contact with life. And it's really what you were talking about at the start, sort of the shadow side. So there's another way of that I'm listening to this is about what happens when we bring together and hold together qualities that look like they might be opposites so that they can inform one another. So a deeply passionate kind of adulthood that takes care of resources and relationships, and that, you know, safe roads get built, and, you know, we have hospitals and all of that kind of deep seriousness that is invested with a kind of wild passion for life and for how extraordinary it is, the kind of difficulties we face and the kind of wonders and joys that we face, and a wildness that is grounded enough to be joy filled so we can do ballet whilst we wash the dishes, but we can also bring that kind of energy to doing emails or paying taxes or doing the ordinary mundane things that it takes to care for others well. Maybe that's exactly why Victoria Erickson has to write this, because it's easy for those qualities to fall apart from one another as if they didn't belong. So we've unbelonged what belongs together in us, probably out of very good reason. I can feel that feeling really exciting in me, because I want to be one who walks the path of belonging again together, that which in me got exiled or separated or judged or whatever, but always to bring it in relationship with values I already care about and qualities that already matter. So I want to be wild in that way, deeply.
You're just having me think, Justin, about what a gift it would be for anything or anyone to be greeted with this kind of enthusiasm, this kind of joy, this kind of interest. And that, as you say, if we can bring these places together, we get to bring, like, I love that you've noticed that to lie on the floor looking at a blade of grass that has frost on it, to see the icicles and study them, is filled with enthusiasm and wildness. And it's also extremely serious at the same time. Like, when you said that, it made me think what kind of gift it is to each of those opposites to be in the presence of the other opposite. You know, and what kind of greeting it might be to a part of me that feels ashamed to be met with, tell me some more about your shame. I'm so excited to hear more about your shame and the way you're ashamed, rather than, oh gosh, tell me some more. Like, I can imagine the gift of being greeted with enthusiasm in places where you really thought enthusiasm did not belong. Whether there was where there's a way that something that's very opposite to something could be a huge welcome to it. So to cultivate oppositeness and know that you can bring them together, like you're saying, and see what happens between them. And of course, that goes for people too. You know, the magic of opposites in people, and how surprising it can be to feel, for me, to feel so met by that, by some kind of serious in a part of me that's very bonkers, and likewise how some of my bonkersness meeting something that's serious, just making me think into all of the ways that different parts can be greeted with things that are very different from them, and how welcoming it can feel.
And that's where this poem, what this poem by Victoria Erickson comes down to for me, is it's a poem of welcome. So let's welcome this in ourselves, and let's have it be brought in service of life together. And I'm really, really struck by what you said, Lizzie, about or would it be to welcome the parts of us and the parts of one another that, for example, feel shame or fear or regret or sadness, to welcome the wildness and aliveness in those, and to meet it with our own wildness and aliveness and presence and enthusiasm. I'd really love to know. I really want to get to know you. I really want to get to know this part. To not be afraid Maybe one of the mistaken ways that we try to help one another is by getting over, I'm trying to find a good word for this, I was going to say over serious, but I think meeting one another seriously really matters, you know, in this way that we're talking about serious wildness or wild seriousness or something. We get over earnest, maybe, or over, oh, you know, let me look really deep and concerned and whatever as you tell me about your shame, or some part of me tells me about its shame. There is really something to be said for welcoming one another with joy. Not joy at the suffering that's implied in any of it, but joy and wonder. I mean, actually, because it is completely amazing. The other thing that didn't have to happen was that we would be able to feel anything. There could have been consciousness without feeling, but it turns out that there's consciousness with feeling. So we feel shame and joy and love, and we only feel love to the extent that we can also feel shame, and we only feel groundedness to the extent that it's also possible for us to feel fear. They also belong together. So I know that this is, we're talking here about something that you and I and the others of us in third space that this conversation is born from have taken up as a really serious commitment, which is to meet one another, to meet being alive, to meet those who come into our path with this kind of enthusiasm and joy and seriousness at the same time. It feels very good to hear it, to hear you say it again, because it's a reminder that we can be together in the really hard stuff, the really weighty stuff, and be a deep commitment to aliveness and care and wonder at the holiness of it all, really, is probably the best word I can muster for it.
Well, Justin, it seems to me that this is what turning towards life is, like, as in the turn towards what's happening. Inside of that is an enthusiasm for what's happening. Just that you would turn towards something has interest in it, has enthusiasm in it. And I just want to say thank you to Victoria Erickson, who I don't know, who I stumbled across this poem and it jumped out at me. I just want to say thank you. And I think I promised, like, before I even got here, to stay wild with anyone who would be wild with me. So I'm really glad of this, and glad for that aspect of humanity to feel validated and welcomed. It's really important. And Justin, thank you for doing very big loops with your plates in the air with water dripping everywhere, and I look forward to hearing the responses from people around you when you start doing that.
I'm going to be arching my arms and pointing my toes whilst I wash the dishes. Definitely. I'm very glad to be in this wildness with you, Lizzie.
And thank you, everybody, for any way you've been listening to us, whether you're walking the dog or you're in bed or trying to fall asleep or doing whatever you're doing. We're very glad that you're here with us, and we'll be back next week with another source. And just another big thank you for joining us today.
Bye, everyone.